From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been less than a week since the United States carried out a military operation in Venezuela, capturing the country's president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife. Maduro is facing criminal charges in the United States. He's been widely considered an authoritarian leader, and for years, the U.S. has been putting pressure on Venezuela in one form or another. In recent months, the Trump administration has been building up the U.S. military presence in the region. But the operation has raised many questions, from the legality of removing Maduro from power through a military operation to who's in charge of the country now and even what happens to Venezuelan oil. There's also concerns about what these actions mean for other countries. And here in Illinois, where thousands of Venezuelans who fled their birth country now reside, emotions are mixed. We're going to spend the first part of today's program talking about this. Joining me now is Hugo Bolta, the Chicago-based publisher of Latino News Network. Hugo, welcome back to the 21st show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Also with us is Luciano Pedota, president of the board of directors of the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance. Luciano, welcome to you as well.
Happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
And Lina Brito is an associate professor of history at Northwestern University. Her work focuses on modern Latin America and the Caribbean. Lina, welcome to the 21st show to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, you can join the conversation today at 800-222-9455. How are you thinking about this U.S. military operation in Venezuela? What do you think of the justifications for the attack? What are the justifications for the attack as you've heard them? And what do you think of the way the Trump administration has handled this and the aftermath? Again, 800-222-9455 is the number. All right, Hugo, I'm going to begin with you. For those who are not as versed in the history of Venezuela, how did we get here over the course of the past decade or so?
Well, if we start with the Nicolas Maduro regime, which is a successor to Hugo Chavez, we're talking about two decades of a country under an authoritarian rule, where over and over again, we've seen elections that have been manipulated or ignored in order to retain power and grip the Venezuelan community. As it pertains to the United States, it's multi-pronged. The first thing, I think, is in which the general public is most familiar with, is the number of people from Venezuela that have sought asylum in the United States because of that regime, and most recently the Maduro regime. And so having that influx of people come to the United States has been at the center of the Trump administration's hard stance on immigration. And what we've seen is both undocumented immigrants that have come to this country, whether it's through legally seeking a political asylum or not, they have been at the mark of the Trump administration in the massive deportations and the strong arming of ICE agents that we've seen across the country, and most recently deadly confrontations like what we saw this week in Minneapolis. Now, most recently, in the ousting of Maduro and being presented in New York to face American justice, what we're hearing from the administration, it's talking from both sides of their figurative mouth, right?
Yeah, and I want to come back to that idea of these shifting explanations. But let me bring Luciano Pedota into the conversation. Can you talk a little bit about the effect Maduro and his politics and policies have had on Venezuela?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not sure to what extent the American public is aware how the Maduro regime basically destroy our economy, our livelihoods, and how people, you know, were forced to flee the country and, you know, cross over to Colombia, and then the Panama Darién jungle, which is extremely dangerous, and then make it all the way through the Central America to come to the United States. I mean, to do something like that, the situation in Venezuela must have been dire, and it was. And just to give you a tangible example, minimum salary in Venezuela is $3. I mean, and so you go buy eggs, and that carton of eggs, the dozen, is going to cost you $6. So, I had the opportunity to collaborate with the Resurrection Project here in Chicago to assist the Venezuelan refugees to process their TPS and their work permits. And I can tell you the stories that I heard is that they really could not put food on the table. And this was done, my guess is it was really done intentionally by the Maduro regime, because they wanted to hold power, and they only want people to stay in Venezuela if they agree with them, their Castro communist ideology, right? And so they really did not care much about the people of Venezuela, and they were funneling a lot of proceeds from oil income, whatever percentage of oil they were able to sell, because they have sanctions and because they're not producing the amount of oil that we used to produce. They have completely collapsed the oil production industry. It's not fully collapsed, but it's only producing like 30% of what we used to produce. So all the little income that they had, they use it for their self interest, for staying in power, to buy their security, buy their generals that provide that keep them in power, and to finance Cuba also. So, and many other things. I mean, we're learning as we move forward all the different ways that they were financing authoritarian regimes like Iran, doing partnerships with China and Russia. And so, they have very little concern for the Venezuelan people. And so there are people in Venezuela right now who you could consider they are just as poor of people in Haiti.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners this is the 21st show. We're talking about the situation in Venezuela with the American military going in last weekend and removing the country's president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife, bringing them back to the United States, ostensibly for to face criminal charges over drug trafficking and other charges like that. We're speaking about this with Luciano Pedota, president of the board of directors of the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance, Hugo Balta, publisher of the Latino News Network, and Lina Brito, associate professor in the Department of History at Northwestern University. And Lina, let me come to you now. I was trying to think about the first time that I remember sort of thinking deeply about the relationship between the United States and Venezuela, and it might have been that speech in 2006 when the late then President Hugo Chavez referred to George Bush as the devil and said that it still smelled like sulfur. This was at the United Nations General Assembly. Talk to me about the relationship the U.S. has had with Venezuela and in particular in Latin America in general.
Well, I think it's important to remember that the U.S.-Venezuelan relation didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened in the context of the rising of leftist governments in Latin America, and Venezuela was perhaps one of the first ones because Hugo Chavez came to power earlier than others. But then other political parties came to power in Bolivia, in Ecuador, in Brazil. And it is in that context what we came to call the pink tide that the US-Venezuelan relations unfolded and developed. And obviously, Venezuela became kind of like the most important case of the confrontation of these two very different paradigms of understanding government, understanding the relationship between a state and society, and understanding the role of those governments in the in global geopolitics more broadly, not just in terms of domestic politics of their own countries. So The intervention that you talk about that happened at the United Nations, it became kind of like such a historic moment precisely because that confrontation came to the fore in a very crude way, right? With a very aggressive metaphor about Bush being the devil, and also Chavez making a point about the role of US imperialism in the Middle East and the world. Remember, it was a critique also of US adventures in Iraq in particular, right? And now we see, because we tend to think that history is linear because we believe in the idea of progress, but history actually is very cyclical. And sometimes we get trapped in these vicious circles or cycles. And now what we see is an intervention on the part of the US in Venezuela that echoes, what the US has done in the Middle East and in the rest of Latin America since the 19th century.
Well, that brings us to the capture then of Maduro last weekend. Lena, what sticks out to you about how this happened?
Well, one of the things that that I have in my mind right now, very fresh, is the two different indictments, because precisely I was reading them yesterday for another conversation that I'm going to have in Colombia in Spanish. And I was looking at the initial indictment of 2020 and the recent indictment that happened after his capture a few days ago. And, my specialty, I teach about modern Latin America, but what I do research about is about drug history, right? So my work is about Colombia in particular, but in a transnational sense, right? And as a drug historian, I found fascinating how these two indictments are so different. The initial one, the one for which they went to Venezuela to capture him, presents a very different picture than the second one, which is the one that they submitted once Maduro had been captured and was brought here to court. In both cases, the charges are about narcotrafficking, conspiracy, narcoterrorism and conspiracy, use of machinery and weapons. But the participants of these conspiracies changed dramatically in the terminology that they used to put those charges on the table also changed dramatically. So while in 2020 they were talking about El Cartel de los Soles, the Cartel of the Suns, which was comprised by these very high-ranking military officers, right? That's that's why they talk about Los Soles, the Suns, because that's the symbol that generals used, not just in Venezuela, but in many Latin American countries on their uniforms, their symbol of their status and ranking. So in the first indictment of 2020, they were trying to make the case that Maduro was the head of that structure for the exportation of cocaine to the United States in association with members of the FARC, the Colombian guerrilla that was in process of negotiating the demobilization at the time in Colombia and finally did it and demobilized, right? And now in the new indictment, we don't see that idea of the Cartel de los Soles at all. I mean, it's mentioned here and there very briefly. And now what we see is the Department of Justice trying to present a more continental picture that includes the Cartel of Sinaloa, that includes, again, the dissident forces of the FARC in Colombia, that include the Zetas in Mexico as well, and the Tren de Aragua, which is the main gang or criminal organization in Venezuela, and now includes Celia Flores, the former first lady who was also captured along with Maduro. So we see how they are kind of like trying to adapt and change the charges to kind of like make these to create a legal foundation for this intervention and to be successful in court. So that's one of the things that I found like really interesting, how they are changing the discourse and how they are improvising on the go.
Yeah, building the plane as they fly it, pick your metaphor, and we'll talk some about the shifting rationale we've heard, and frankly, the lack of a sort of storytelling impulse on the part of this administration with the public and the Congress about how they are arriving at this. Let me share a couple of quick messages. We asked members of our texting group about this. Lex in Champaign said, Venezuela is a sovereign nation. The U.S. has no right to invade it, seize its leader, and take over its commerce and oil. It's another sign of insanity. It's not about curbing drugs unless the U.S. wants to become a drug supplier. It's about oil extraction. Almost a century ago, this was called gunboat diplomacy. Was wrong then, is wrong now. We also heard from Adrienne in Carbondale, who added, I think the attack was absolute insanity, and I'm afraid about the country starting more wars. Venezuela is a sovereign nation. We have no business running it. If you want to call in, 800-222-9455 is the number. We need to take a break. When we come back, we'll have more on the U.S. and Venezuela. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.
Support for the 21st Show comes from the Des Moines Arts Center, presenting Manuel Alvarez Bravo, a pioneer of Mexican photography, featuring collaborators like Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and more. On view through January 18th. More information at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the aftermath of the U.S. military operation in Venezuela, from the capture of its president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife, to the ongoing questions about who's in charge in the country and what this means for other parts of Latin America, as well as the thousands of Venezuelans who now reside in Illinois. We are speaking about this with Lina Brito, who is a professor at Northwestern University, Luciano Pedota of the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance, and Hugo Bolta, publisher of the Latino News Network. You can join us today at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Hugo, I want to share another text message we got. This is from Anne in Urbana, who said, even though Maduro is an evil man, what we did was wrong. It was wrong to leave Congress out of the loop. And I find all this talk about Cuba, Colombia, and Mexico being next, and that Trump wants to claim the Western Hemisphere, to be very disturbing. And Greenland? Really? Anne says. This whole thing is out of control, an out of control president with no legal guardrails, supported by people who see dollar signs as the goal. No one seems able to stop them. End quote. Hugo, we'll come back to the sort of broader geopolitical questions here, but what do you make of the way the Trump administration carried out this strike from the standpoint of American politics and government?
We've seen it, that type of governing by executive orders and in a vacuum the whole year of his first year in office. So this is nothing new for him to operate in a vacuum and then sort of backpedal and then start to speak to members of Congress, et cetera. And then the other things about Greenland and threats to Colombia and Cuba and other countries. One of the expertise of Donald Trump is to distract. And so what he wants for us to do is to talk about Greenland, to talk about other countries, while behind closed doors, he's making the moves, the plans to control what he really was after in ousting Maduro, and that's control of their oil, because that is American capitalism at its worst, and imperialism. So I think what we saw in regard to the operation of ousting Maduro is consistent to how President Trump operates, with no regard to our three branches of government.
I want to share another text message. This one's from Tom in Elburn, and Luciano, I'll ask you about this. He says, my daughter-in-law was born and raised in Venezuela. She was forced to leave her home and family after suffering violent attacks, including two carjackings. She was in tears and ecstatic about Maduro's capture, just overwhelmed with emotion and joy. If you haven't lived there, you don't know what it's like. Luciano, I wonder how that compares with some of the reactions you have heard to this news.
Well, I would agree with that caller. I mean, Venezuela was one of the most insecure countries in the world at some point. And it was really hard to make a living there. I also have friends who got hijacked, taken to an ATM machine, take all the money out. It happened to this friend of mine twice, and then he ended up moving to Costa Rica. So, you know, yeah, and not to talk about the militias, the colectivos that the Chavismo arm and are constantly threatening the population every time the population comes out to defend their rights. I mean, there were many protests throughout this journey to try to get back to or to rescue our democracy, in which Venezuelan citizens were attacked by colectivos, were put in jail, were tortured. I mean, you know, this is really, Chavismo became an autocratic, totalitarian, criminal organization in a narco state, you know. So, you know, when we talk about sovereignty, to get back to the comments of some of the callers, it's, are we really a sovereign nation if, you know, our elections are not recognized by the government, if they're stolen, right? And we can't choose the people who we want to be governed by, you know, if there are no independent powers in Venezuela. Chavismo controls all the institutions. And, you know, and we know very well that Maduro responded to the Cuban regime. So, you know, talking about the attack, I know we don't get involved into the legality of any comments about the legality of the intervention. We're going to let the institutions, the international institutions, and internally here in the United States, we're going to let that debate for the pertinent institutions and Congress, right? What we can say is that the Venezuelans are very happy to have had Maduro removed from power. By removing Maduro, you're actually taking out the Cuban component of this complex, multifaceted problem. You know, and getting back to some of the comments that Lina Brito made regarding the indictments, I mean, the other day I heard that Maduro had more indictments or more crimes that are not indicted, but he has more crimes than El Chapo Guzman. He makes El Chapo Guzman, you know, look like a petty thief, basically. So he's, you know, these, for example, they provided, Chavismo provided passports to Iranian Hezbollah agents, Venezuelan passports, and the United States knows this, has the evidence to that. That's been around for a while. I'm kind of surprised that's not in the indictment. So we're dealing with a criminal organization, and we know this. The Venezuelans, we've known this for a long time. We have exhausted every tool in our democratic system to oust them out, and we have not been able to do so.
I just want to jump in
1 second, because yes, the initial reaction, beginning with Venezuelans and other communities, is of course joy and relief because, again, of the suffering under the Maduro regime. But the Maduro regime is very much still in power with Delcy Rodriguez, and that is the problem. The problem is that this the Trump administration's sole focus on oil and not really about what the Venezuelan people need, which is to be a sovereign nation, that's not at the top of the priority list. Trump just recently said that he's working with Delcy Rodriguez, that they're you know, he's being very complimentary of her, that they're working with the Trump administration. He does not care who is at the helm of Venezuela. Venezuelans do, but he doesn't, as long as the person that's in the helm will work with his administration in the best interests of the United States in regards to capitalism and power, not about the best interest, the democratic interest of the Venezuelan community.
Lena Brito, I want to come back to you because we have less than 10 minutes left in our time together. But before we get to, you know, sort of what's next for Venezuela, I do want to linger on this question of why this happened. And I think back to the Iraq invasion, for example, and there was careful, practically a year of buildup to that, you know, speeches at the United Nations, coalition building around the world. This there was some buildup here, and you can understand now the bombing of the boats in the Caribbean for the past few months was part of this. Perhaps you can understand, arresting Venezuelans and sending them to the gulag in El Salvador is part of this story. But, you know, there are these shifting stories, right? It's about criminal gangs. It's about drugs. It's about immigration. It's about oil. The president himself has, you know, now been talking about that. How are you trying to make, what are you making sense, if you are, of these shifting narratives?
Well, I think the shifting narratives are showing us the clash or the multi-layer nature of motivations and interests that are at play here right now. So it's not just one single thing, right? Maybe on the part of President Trump, there's just one thing, you know, it's like doing business in oil. But behind that, there's more than that. And depending on who we're talking about. So on the one hand, we have kind of like two different sectors within the Trump administration kind of like clashing since he came back to power a year ago. And that is one sector that is more kind of like in favor of negotiations, in favor of corporate interest. And that sector was represented by Trump's special envoy to Caracas, Richard Grenell. He is the one who was negotiating with Maduro himself and with the whole regime about, you know, a license for Chevron in particular, American oil companies to operate in Venezuela with Venezuelan oil. It was also negotiating the release of American prisoners in Venezuelan jails. He actually achieved the release of a few of them. Six first and then 10 more later on. That was kind of like a one approach. And then we had the other side of the Trump administration, which we could call the Hispanic Hawks, that represented by Marco Rubio, and how they are actually thinking not so much in negotiating and not so much in business as usual with oil, although they care about that as well, but especially about regime change, and not only Venezuela, but like the whole redesigning the hemisphere to make the U.S. Once again, the superpower in the region and make Latin America and the Caribbean the U.S. backyard, right? The area of influence. So for those people, it seems to me that why this is happening right now, it seems to me that Marco Rubio and the Hispanic Hawks are the ones who are winning this internal clash for now, right? And then we have to have in mind an even broader picture, which is the global geopolitical picture. So how we are moving from like a bipolar world to a tripolar world, and we need to consider Russia and China and the U.S. as the three big powers vying for global supremacy. And in the all public discourses and speeches about this on the part of Trump, we see Russia and China figuring in the considerations as well. So yes, it's about oil, but it's really more than oil. It's also about ideology, and it's also about a long-term geopolitical picture that they are kind of like organizing all the pieces of the chess to make Latin America and the Caribbean the area of influence of the United States in this new era of global politics.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I heard some people at the Bulwark who are sort of formerly of the neocon school who said, you know, America used to think of its sphere of influence as the entire world. And in some ways, this is a tightening of that focus. I do want to think about, for the last few minutes we have, about what comes next for the people of Venezuela. And Luciano, I don't know if you remember Colin Powell, Secretary of State, and the Pottery Barn rules, right? The idea was, in Iraq, you break it, you bought it. What comes next for the people of Venezuela with regard to the leadership in the country now, and you know, whether that's the U.S. or the Maduro regime basically still in place, just without him at the top?
Yeah, I would agree that, you know, you break it, it's yours, right? But I actually think that the United States did not want to break it. They didn't want to do what they did in Iraq. So what they did is they took out Maduro, which was actually, I think Maduro, it appears that he was betrayed by Chavistas, by Delcy Rodriguez and Jorge Rodriguez, the brother. So what they, the U.S., I think what they want is to take Maduro out, which they did, and now negotiate with Delcy, you know, under threat, obviously, because they said, well, if either you do what we want you to do, or you're gonna, your fate is gonna be worse than Maduro's. So, you know, yesterday I learned that President Maduro or President Trump is going to be meeting with Maria Corina Machado. So that came as fresh news to us, because like Hugo Balta mentioned, you know, we, the Venezuelans, felt that our voice was not being heard. And by that comment that Trump made publicly, that Maria Corina Machado was not ready to take over their country. And that's true. There's a degree of truth to that, because Chavistas, they still control all the other institutions. So, you know, I think Trump is and Marco Rubio are going to force Delcy to confront the different factions within Chavismo, because you have Diosdado Cabello, he was supposed to be number two, very dangerous man, very radical, and he's armed and he has the militias. And so, you know, they need to do something about him. So we don't know how this is going to unfold. We hope that Delcy Rodriguez convinces Diosdado Cabello that the Chavismo adventure and the Chavismo nightmare is over, it's come to an end, and that he puts his arms down and somehow finds a way to go into exile. There is also the Minister of Defense, and our hope is that he's joining Delcy in helping to with this transition, and that eventually, you know, Maria Corina Machado can take over, or a transition government takes over with the elected president, with Edmundo González. We do have an elected president who won the election in 2024. So, and they can help us with the transition. Now, we're not naive. We make no mistake in thinking that, you know, the liberation of Venezuela will cost us. You know, I'm sure Trump will pass a bill on how much, you know, it cost the army to be out there and how much the Maduro extraction cost. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that he's going to want American companies to have priority when it comes to extracting oil, et cetera, et cetera. We're not naive about that. We've partnered in the past with the United States. They had companies there extracting oil. We benefit from it. We had Petróleos of Venezuela, sure, which is known as PDVSA. And it's one of the top five oil producing companies in the world. And the Chavistas depleted it completely. We're going to need financing to rebuild that institution and then continue to have income so that we can rebuild our country.
Well, this, I suspect, will not be the last time we are talking about Venezuela. I want to thank Luciano Pedota with the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance, Lena Brito, professor at Northwestern University, and Hugo Balta, publisher of the Latino News Network. Thank you all for being with us and sharing your expertise and perspectives with us today on The 21st Show. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.